news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus, you won't know if you don't listen.
And I thank you so much for tuning in. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. I'm running a little crazy this morning, to be honest with you. May not look like it from the outside, but now that February is here, I had this horrible, horrible, busy, crowded, my calendar looked ridiculous all through January. And right now, I'm enjoying some alone time. I don't have a lot on the calendar. I've been going to some of the movies that I had missed, especially because the Oscars are tonight, which is a big thing for me. So it's like, it's too bad there's so little news going on. Oh, wait a minute. What a week this was. Didn't there used to be a show called That Was the Week That Was? It was a comedy skit show. Anyway, just in 1 week, we had impeachment, we had the State of the Union address, the National Prayer Breakfast, which was embarrassing. We had Iowa, talk about embarrassing. We had another debate among the Democrats, not all of whom are represented on stage, who are running for nomination for the presidency. We had news on the economy. Donald Trump did what Donald Trump does. And speaking of what Donald Trump does, I was fascinated this morning to hear this statistic. It gives you some perspective about this child and man child that we're dealing with in the White House. In 2018 and 2019, and we know he likes to tweet a lot, but in 2018 and 2019, his tweets were averaging somewhere between 20 and 50 a day, on average. In the past 8 days, the president has tweeted 333 times, and this morning they added another 20 within 30 minutes. So the need to dominate the news cycle is so palpable in watching this man. And it's, frankly, to me, it's kind of embarrassing. The one thing that came out of the impeachment stuff that I just want to, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on the impeachment stuff, because I thought the summation, especially the one by Adam Schiff, was powerful. Kudos to Mitt Romney for at least having been willing to vote his conscience. He was just trying to get back at Trump. No, he has always been a man of conscience. I just don't always agree with what he wants to do and with the policy underpinnings that motivate him. Nevertheless, I think the most resonant thing for me after the impeachment vote where the Senate acquitted the president, refused to remove him from office, for me, the resonant remnant of all that is the fact that there were several Republican senators who were willing to say out loud that what the president did was wrong. It was just plain wrong. They did not believe, or at least they said they did not believe, that it warranted removing the president from office, especially with an election coming up where the people can be heard. Although technically the Senate is representing the people, but hey. But this idea that people like Lamar Alexander and Senator Collins from up in the Northeast, Susan Collins, the fact that they said that they hoped that he had learned from this event, they hoped that it would mean that he was that his actions would be tempered. Well, in the State of the Union speech, which was given the day before that vote was taken, even in that speech, the president was kind of boasting as the Republicans sitting in the joint chamber were giving him what he craves at rallies. 4 more years, 4 more years. And he was expecting acquittal on Wednesday. His Gallup poll rating hit the highest number it has been since he was elected, came up to 49%. He's never been at 50 or more. And that's just one poll. Other polls had him more typically in the 46, 47 point range. He's been very steady there. He spent much of the State of the Union speech boasting about the economy that he said he had fostered, highlighted his trade policies, tax cuts, deregulation, depicting Democratic politicians as socialists, which we know is where his campaign is going to focus all the way through to November. He withheld his handshake when the Speaker of the House, as is appropriate, when the Speaker of the House held out her hand when he first walked up to give his State of the Union speech, and he ignored it. Then, of course, big, big carrying on about the fact that after he finished speaking, the Speaker tore up her copy of the speech. She made a point of doing it in front of the cameras, right behind him as he finished his speech. And, you know, it's okay to say that Nancy Pelosi ripped him a new one. Now, that's all right-wing media was talking about. I never heard anybody on talk radio or on TV, on Fox, I never heard anybody mention that he had withheld his hand. Although they could certainly justify that by saying, well, after what she had just done with impeachment, you know, why would he acknowledge her? Well, why would she acknowledge him at that point? It's because it is protocol, it is appropriate, it is tradition. None of those things, of course, matter to him. Later on, when she was asked about it, Nancy Pelosi said that President Trump had used the Congress of the United States as a backdrop for a reality show, presenting a state of mind that had no contact with reality whatsoever. And there were some members of Congress, Republicans, and then the president picked it up. In fact, I think it originated online with some ridiculous post that it was illegal for Nancy Pelosi to tear up that speech because it was an official government document, and it is illegal to destroy official government documents. Well, it turns out that that's just bull because it wasn't an official government document. Whatever his filed with the government speech may have been, it wasn't the copy that he handed Nancy Pelosi. And this is very typical. You see this all the time when a president goes up to give a State of the Union speech. They're introduced by the Speaker of the House, shake hands with the Vice President, who is President of the Senate and therefore sits next to the Speaker of the House during the speech. And then they shake hands with the Speaker of the House, and then they hand the Speaker a copy of the State of the Union speech. And Nancy Pelosi, on every previous occasion, has actually sat there and gone through the pages as the person is giving the speech. She can see where they're ad-libbing, adding something that was not written, which happens. But all she had was a copy of the speech, and she tore it up. She said she decided to shred what she saw as a compilation of falsehoods to make a statement that clearly indicates to the American people that this is not the truth. And that speech, according to every legal expert they've talked to, that was hers to do with as she wanted. It's given to her as a courtesy, just like her proffered handshake would have been a courtesy. And, you know, we know about this president that he has no class or graciousness at all and doesn't care about tradition. And the people who support him, the Trumpsters, the most virulent supporters of the president, they have this idea that anything he does to stick a finger in the eye of government is just fine, because that's why they elected him. They want to undo the system. They don't like the way the system is working. And as far as they're concerned, anything he does is just fine because it's, again, a finger in the eye. Now, one of the guests that the president introduced at the State of the Union speech that got a huge response was Juan Guaido, who is the man who has been challenging Venezuela's President Maduro. And you may recall late last year there was an election in Venezuela and Maduro retained the presidency, even though the people and Juan Guaido himself have said that Guaido actually should be considered the president. And our government did recognize that Guaido is rightfully the president of Venezuela, even though Maduro will not give up his seat. So the president invited Juan Guaido to the State of the Union address. And he uses Venezuela, the president uses Venezuela as his negative example of socialism. So, you know, the fact that Bernie Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist, which does have a distinction from socialism itself, but nevertheless, the president uses Venezuela as the ultimate example of this is what will happen to our country if a socialist gets in. Well, as it turns out, as a result of Juan Guaido having been at the State of the Union, six American oil executives are under house arrest in Maduro's Venezuela. They were taken from their homes by intelligence police. Their current whereabouts are unknown. And this is not only what the president might claim happens with socialism, but I would claim this is what happens when you have the kind of a president who considers himself a dictator and that he has the right to use the military or the intelligence community for whatever he feels is in his best interest, which would therefore be in the best interest of the American people. God, too bad there was no news this week.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
Okay. Again, I thank you so much for tuning in. By the way, if you want to get in on the conversation, the phone number here is 760-544-8255. 760-544-8255. Or you can email a question or comment to studio@ihubradio.com. Today is February 9th. And I will quickly share with you something that is totally out of order of what I thought I was going to be talking about. But these are a couple of, you know, I want to throw some not horrible news in the middle of everything I'm talking about today. This week, back in 1922, the president was President Warren G. Harding. And on February 8th in 1922, he had a radio installed in the White House. I wish that was all they had installed in the White House these days. Back in 1952, and I remember this, Queen Elizabeth II proclaimed her accession to the British throne following the death of her father, King George VI. 1952, in this week, Queen Elizabeth became Queen of England. And I found this one interesting. In 1971, NASDAQ held its first trading day. It seems impossible to believe that some of the things that we have come to take so for granted actually had a beginning. For example, we take Rush Limbaugh for granted. I mean, really, he's been on the air. He starred in Sacramento. I remember listening to him in his early days. He developed his persona. He first started out doing a kind of comedic take on things, but then he began to take himself seriously, and then the political world began to take him seriously, and we know where that ended up. Well, at the State of the Union address, the president awarded quite spectacularly with Melania Trump pulling a ribbon and a medal out of her purse or her pocket or something and draping it over the neck of Rush Limbaugh, awarding Rush Limbaugh the Medal of Honor, which is basically the highest award that a president gives. So, you know, if you want to talk about abuse of power, the president has the power to decide who he will, or she, who the president will give a Medal of Honor to. And in the past, it's been given to people like, I believe, President Obama gave one to Rosa Parks. You know, people like that. People who have made a difference. I think Mother Teresa probably got one once. People who have made a real difference in the culture, in the values, in the contributions to this country. Rush Limbaugh, to be sympathetic about it, just announced last week also, what a week it was, that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And I'm sure he lit a cigar to celebrate. Or to lament. He's known for having smoked many, 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 many cigars in his life. And that is a sad reality. And anyone who knows anyone who's ever had stage 4 anything knows that the treatment for it is debilitating. And by the time you reach stage 4, your chances of surviving very long are somewhat limited. But to give the Medal of Freedom very publicly, instead of just announcing that he was going to give it to him. Oh, and it was interesting because I certainly knew at least 24 hours before it happened. And it was out there in the media before it happened. But Rush Limbaugh feigned innocence. He was shocked. He had been invited to sit in the box at the State of the Union with the First Lady, and he was shocked that he was getting that medal. Well, come on, if I knew it. But this is a man who has characterized women as feminazis, unless they are Phyllis Schlafly-type women. He has described what he calls the barbarism of black athletes. He had a preoccupation, if you'd never listened to his show, with the word studs, male college guys. whose manhood is allegedly being curbed by evil co-eds who want to emasculate them. Studs. Limbaugh once said women should not be allowed on juries where the accused is a stud. He said that Hillary Clinton kept a testicle lockbox. Now that's funny, but it's not funny when it is compounded with these same kinds of characterizations over and over and over again. His comedy, if you could ever call it that, it was rude, it was mean-spirited, and people followed him, including the president. The president and Rush Limbaugh are of a similar age, and they both seem to have this conviction that whatever their successes may be.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
And I apologize, I got cut off at the end of the last segment because I was so into what I was saying, I was absolutely not watching the clock. It's one of those days. It's been one of those weeks. It's exhausting. It's mentally and psychologically exhausting. I got a call from the head of one of the local Democratic clubs this week asking if, because when I sent out my blast, I said I was going to focus on some good news, and I am going to before this show is over. I've got some good news. But when he saw that in my blast for this week, he called me and he said, listen, we're having our meeting on Valentine's Day, February 14th. Is there any way that you could come over? Our people are so depressed with all of the news that's been on all week long. They could do with some good news. Would you be willing to come over and just do 10 minutes of good news? And unfortunately, I couldn't do it on Valentine's Day, but I'm going to do some of it on today's show. And I sent him back a couple of items and I said, I appreciate the invitation. I really wish I could be there, but hey, here's a couple pieces of good news. Share them with your club. Now, the economy, I'm back to talking about the State of the Union. The economy is something that Trump has the right to crow about. We credit the people who are in office when there are good numbers with those good numbers. And let's face it, we blame whoever's in office when the numbers are bad. And the big headline that about jobs this past week is that they added in January over 225,000 jobs. That's good news. That's more than had been predicted. But interestingly enough, the unemployment rate went up a tenth of a point. And I'm pretty good with numbers, generally speaking. I did good in math. But it's hard to understand. Wait a minute. We're creating more jobs than even expected, and the unemployment rate goes up? Well, yes, because here's the underlying data that gives some sense to that. The share of adults either working or looking for work rose to almost 63.5%. Its highest level since the middle of 2013. So there's a lot of people who may have dropped out of the workforce who are now looking for jobs because more jobs are being created, and that pushes up the unemployment rate because they get counted. People who have just totally dropped out don't get counted. And another piece of good news on the economy. The share of adults between 25 and 54, peak earning years, people who have pretty much finished their education and are nowhere near yet the point where they're getting too old, they're going to be cycled out of their jobs and they're going to retire. So between the ages of 25 and 54, the share of adults working reached 80.6%. That's really good news. The bad news is a lot of those jobs have no benefits. A lot of those jobs, people are working two jobs because they're paying minimum wage. So, yeah, there's a lot more jobs being created, but not all of them are jobs that are able to support people who actually have a life. There are a lot of structural problems in the economy. There is inequality in pay, if nothing else. Women are still paid less than men. There's a lack of mobility for a lot of people because they can't afford to leave the job they're in to maybe go apply for a higher paying job because of the benefits that they're getting and that they cannot live without, particularly if they have somebody with like a pre-existing condition. And under the employment numbers, there are some other realities. Spending on construction by the government edged slightly down in December. First annual decline in 8 years. And this is a weakness in what they call non-residential construction, which fell almost 2%. Sharpest drop since almost a year ago. Now, factories expanded. They had been on a losing streak for 5 months, and they did expand. But then there's the reality of some other stuff going on. A report came out that the steel barrier wall that Trump is building along the Mexican border, which, by the way, is one of the largest federal infrastructure projects in United States history, surpassing even the building of the federal highways.
Is this the one
that blew down? The wall system. McMullen just asked me if that's the one that blew down. No, but listen to this. The long-term costs of maintaining hundreds of miles of additional barriers is largely unknown, but experts are saying it will come to billions of dollars in order to maintain the wall.
A year.
Oh, not a year, overall. But it will last far into the future. So they're just projecting now that just being able to, in coming decades, the upkeep and repair over the next, let's say, 20 years is going to be in the billions of dollars, which I don't think the president mentioned when he said how much he could bring that wall in for so little money, and it didn't matter because Mexico was going to pay for it anyway. With regard to the stock market, which, again, this past week was hitting new highs, the five biggest stocks that we have on our market in the United States: Apple, Microsoft, Google's parent company, Amazon, and Facebook have grown so explosively that they are now accounting for nearly 18% by market value of the stock market. Never before have five companies held such powerful sway over the stock market Dow Jones index. But there is a time in the past that five stocks did control this much of the Standard & Poor's, not the Dow, the Standard & Poor's 500. The last time five stocks dominated the Standard & Poor's 500 was during the tech bubble at the turn of the millennium, which I might add is when I lost most of my money because I had it invested in tech stocks. Now, one final thing I want to say about the State of the Union. When it was over, my bottom line conclusion was that whoever wrote that speech was a really good speechwriter, knew how to say what Trump wanted to say, but did it eloquently. It was full of made-for-TV moments. And this is what we have to expect in the upcoming campaign. Trump may not know how to be a president. He may not know how to run a government. But he knows how to do TV. He knows how to get an audience. He knows how to generate controversy and news. So with regard to the State of the Union, just to be clear, with regard to jobs and the economy, he said that this new trade deal between Canada, Mexico, and the United States will create nearly 100,000 new high-paying American auto jobs. That's an exaggeration. Maybe it will get to about 75,000 jobs if, in fact, all of the production comes back to the United States that he is hoping will come back. But it's not the 100,000 that he claimed. He also said in 8 years under the Obama administration, over 300,000 working age people dropped out of the workforce. And in just 3 years of his administration, 3.5 million working age people have joined the workforce. The truth is, those numbers are misleading and they had only one point. And that was to trash Obama. Donald Trump has never gotten over the fact that Obama publicly skewered him at one of those correspondence dinners when Obama took on Trump and had the whole audience laughing at Trump after Trump had been supporting the idea that Obama wasn't even born in America. He will say and do anything to trash Obama's record. Now, he also said, from the instant I took office, I moved rapidly to revive the U.S. economy, slashing a record number of job-killing regulations, enacting historic and record-setting tax cuts, and fighting for fair and reciprocal trade agreements. There have been a lot of hiccups in the economy since Trump took office. For example, one of his claims, prominent claims, in addition to the idea that Mexico was going to pay for the wall, one of his claims was that he was going to get us to 4% growth, no problem. Well, growth last year was 2.3%. It's a far cry from the 3 or 4% that he was predicting. The tax cuts temporarily boosted growth in 2018, but it also increased deficit spending. He said he was going to wipe out the deficit within 8 years. All he's done is increase it. Drug prices, he said in the State of the Union, for the first time in 51 years, the cost of prescription drugs actually went down. The truth is, some prescription drug prices have edged down, but that's because there's been a decline in generics. Prices for brand name medications are still going up. So if you can't find a good generic for what you've been prescribed, you're not paying less for your drugs. On immigration, Trump said, before I came into office, if you showed up illegally on our southern border and were arrested, you were simply released and allowed into our country, never to be seen again. By the way, that's not true. My administration has ended catch and release. If you come illegally now, you will be promptly removed. That's just not true. Under the previous administration and even the Bush administration, Mexicans were quickly returned back over the U.S.-Mexico border. Others were held in detention until they were deported. Catch and release. The truth is, Trump actually expanded that policy last year during the surge in migrants. That's why Nancy Pelosi ripped him a new one. This is Anita Rufus. You are listening to iHub Radio.
because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me. I am live on iHub Radio with the Lovable Liberal Show on Sundays from 10 to noon. And then we have podcasts up where you normally find your podcast. You will find ours. Now, I like to do a thing called stop listening to what he's saying and watch what he's doing. And here's one thing that I didn't hear anything about in the news this past week. And yet another blow to the environment. Trump is finalizing plans to open land that has been in Utah's Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. He wants to open it up to mining and oil and gas exploration. Now, I don't know an awful lot about the use of public lands for things like this and how much it affects the land. And, you know, some would argue, well, people aren't living on federal lands, whatever. But I thought we were energy independent. I thought he made a big deal out of that at the State of the Union address. And the fact is we had reached a point of being, quote unquote, energy independent under Barack Obama. But if we're energy independent, why do we have to open federal lands to mining and to gas and oil exploration? I don't get it. Now, here's another thing that was in the news this week, and this really did disturb me, because if you don't understand what's underneath this, I don't know if you remember, but one of the ways that the president punished states like California and New York that didn't support him, that overwhelmingly do not support him, one of the ways he punished those states was in his tax cut. One of the tax laws they put through said that the state taxes that you pay are not deductible as part of your federal income tax return, because not all states tax the income of their residents. California does, New York does, Texas does not, Florida does not. Okay, if you want to live in those places. 10 longest years of my life in Dallas, Texas. I'd live in Austin. But in any event, that was one of the ways that he tried to punish those states, by hurting the residents of those states who didn't support him. Well, now he has a new one. Now, if you live in the state of New York, you cannot enroll in the program that allows travelers to get through airport lines really fast. There is a kind of trusted traveler program, they call it, Global Entry. And it speeds people through customs when you're coming back from Europe or from South America or from Asia. But because the state of New York now has a statewide sanctuary law that is blocking immigration officials from being able to access motor vehicle records now that New York is allowing illegals to get driver's licenses, which is a good thing. The Department of Homeland Security says it will no longer let New York State residents enroll or re-enroll in the Global Entry program. What could possibly be the reason? Well, it's because they're giving driver's licenses to illegals. The process of getting on one of these lists, this isn't just like going through the check-in list faster because you got approved at your local Staples. This is a global entry program that allows people coming through customs to get through a little faster. And they have to go through all kinds of background check. It's ridiculous.
Not only, Anita, do they have to go through background checks, oftentimes they have to fly and go to specific airports for their in-person interviews
right.
and fingerprinting and all of that.
Right.
There's a full FBI background.
Got it. Thank you. Now, on Trump's to-do list to get reelected, they have three really important principles that are guiding the reelection campaign for the president. Take back the suburbs. He has lost suburban women big time. And a lot of their husbands aren't real happy yet right now either. And this is about health care. This is about child care. This is about getting equal pay for equal work. So they want to focus on taking back the suburbs, on courting black voters. And aside from Rush Limbaugh, did you see the kind of pandering that the president did at the State of the Union? Not that the people he was acknowledging or giving awards to weren't qualified or weren't deserving, but it was just such an obvious outreach to a population with the kind of negative view that was all it would take to convince them that they ought to support him. He is among one of the most divisive leaders in our history. And the realignment of moderate voters in the suburbs toward the Democrats is a big issue for the Republicans. Now, as a result of the votes and the comments that were made around impeachment, what Trump has now engendered is that Republican Senator Susan Collins is getting death threats because she acquitted Donald Trump. Now, Obama got threats largely because he was black, but this is ridiculous. It's bad enough that we have the kind of people who will make outward, overt threats based on someone's race. But because a senator voted to acquit in whatever good conscience she feels was appropriate, you don't threaten to kill people. Listen, I once had a stalker on a station that I was on before I came here to iHub. I had a stalker. He sent things directly to my home address. He called me at home. He once followed me to an event and then tried to follow me home. It's scary as hell. Nobody should be getting threats just because they do their work. Handful of Republican senators who tried to get the president not to fire Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the European Union. They are getting death threats. And talk about heads on pikes. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, his twin brother, Marie Yovanovitch. This is not good, folks. Now he says Congress should erase his impeachment.